We believe in unlimiting every potential, making the impossible possible. It's our passion, determination, and our purpose. Like how we pioneered unlimited streaming and unlimited data plans. U-Mobile, where your unlimited potential begins.
This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U-Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C. and welcome to The Breakfast Grill. On today's Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with Sean Kinney. He's the CEO of the Climate Bonds Initiative, an international NGO working to mobilize global capital for climate action, as we understand how the pandemic has impacted the issuances of green bonds. A very good morning to you, Sean. Just looking at the numbers, global green bond issuance is likely to hit US $1 trillion next year. Now, spurred primarily by EU and Japan, according to estimates by yourselves, the Climate Bond Initiatives, notwithstanding all the market volatility caused by the war and soaring energy prices. But where is Asia in the picture?
We expect the largest green bond issuer in the world next year to be China. So that's, of course, a big chunk of north of Asia. ASEAN, however, is also doing quite well. We've got substantial issuance coming out of Singapore, out of Thailand, out of the Philippines, out of Vietnam. Not so much out of Malaysia, but we've seen quite a lot of green sukuk. But the emphasis in Malaysia tends to be social bonds or social sukuk so far, partly because the Malaysian Securities Commission has had a bit of focus in that kind of area. But we expect to see that change in the coming year. The biggest issue in the region is Indonesia, and that's because the government has chosen to issue a series of sovereign green sukuk in the past, and also a social sukuk in the middle of the pandemic to finance pandemic recovery measures. So there's a hell of a lot of story. You know, one of the juiciest stories I've got is a major bank in the Philippines issued a green bond 3 years ago now, before COVID, in Swiss francs. They were the first financial institution in ASEAN to get negative interest rates.
Wow.
How's that? But to get a leading Filipino bank to issue at effectively Filipino sovereign currency and get negative interest rate was an astounding triumph of the green appetite.
Yeah, I think you're giving us very good anecdotal evidence that you're beginning to see Asian sovereigns, corporates beginning to issue green bonds, right? But there's still a lot of room to catch up, isn't it? It is the EU, the US governments and corporates that are taking the large chunk of the issuance at the moment, no?
Sure, but then that's also where the big bond markets are. So, you know, the issuance, if you started looking at percentage issuance of local bond markets, the difference is nowhere near as stark. We've actually made quite a lot of progress in ASEAN. Don't get me wrong, I don't want to pat anyone on the back here, because we've got to do a lot more than what we've done if we're going to contribute to addressing the challenge of the millennium, the challenge of the species, climate change. But it's not true that nothing's happened in the area. In fact, we've made really good progress in terms of percentage of bonds issued in the region, which are green or social or sustainable in that area. We're getting there. Now, we might not be in the scale of France, but we are in the scale of Italy, for example, in terms of percentage.
As you say, right, the challenge of the millennium, but I wonder how much the pandemic has set back this approach, this quest, right, to solve this challenge. Because if you look at the issuances for this year, I think first half of the year, $417 billion issuance. It's a 27% drop from the previous correspondence for the first half of last year. So I can see that the pandemic has put a setback in terms of issuances. The question is, how fast can we do the recovery, right?
It's not strictly speaking true, because that's green. If we start including other kinds of bonds, we saw a huge increase in social bonds, which are essentially, instead of putting money into green, putting money into pandemic recovery. That's what it was. The European Union started a big program of social bonds, for example. But they've also started now a big program of green bonds, which will dwarf the pandemic by the time it's finished. The Japanese government's announced a $147 billion equivalent program of green transformation bonds. So this is now coming to bear. So basically, we saw a lull in the first half of this year, a fallback, as people, well, the reason things fell back in the first half of this year was we had the invasion of Ukraine, and bond markets fell apart everywhere. And now we're seeing a really strong take up again, with governments coming to the fore as a bigger part of the market than they have been in past years, but a lot of corporate. So everyone, every bank I'm speaking to says that their order book is totally full.
Yeah, this is about rebuilding the nation right after the pandemic, and the need to basically source income and using the opportunity now to use social and green kind of causes to rebuild your nation using green bonds and social bonds.
Correct. Exactly right. Yeah. Something special here, you know, this is new. The idea that you say what you're going to do with the money that contributes and you report on it, that hasn't happened before. This is fresh. Yeah. So if you're a bond investor in another country, you actually want to see that the government's what the government is doing with its money. And you want to see that they're doing something that's going to reduce forward risk. And this adds a different layer on this whole program of bond issuance, which wasn't there before.
And so I want to get your perspective on yields. You know, when we have this perception of green bonds, social bonds, needing this additional reporting, this additional layer of complexity, right, in how you issue the bond, does it add cost to the bond? Does it affect its alpha and returns then?
Well, it adds cost in the sense that you need to identify, track, and report on what it is you're doing, which frankly you should be doing anyway, in my view, but let's put that aside for a minute. Setting up a program, it takes some effort if you haven't got one. If you're already doing it, say you're a corporate that's doing quality sustainability reporting every year, as many corporates are now, right? You've actually got the program. It's not going to take a lot of effort. So, but if you're getting your act together to figure out what you're doing that's on the right track, yeah, it's going to take a bit of effort, but you're going to have to do it anyway. I mean, markets are shifting. We now have pretty well every major investor in the world believing that the shape of the future will be clear and grim, especially after the Biden Climate Summit last year, which had all major Western economies committing to 2030 targets as well as 2050 targets. It's only a matter of how this is going to change, how quickly it's going to change. So if you want to maintain the interest of global investors going forward, you have to start looking at what your green credentials are anyway and reporting on them and signaling them, because that makes you a lower risk investment for debt investors, fixed income investors, because they're saying if you're not doing something to prepare for green and to prepare for this tidal wave coming through, you are likely to be knocked for six.
And it's a very interesting point about the risk relationship. I think the talk in town now is that green bonds have lower risk portfolio, isn't it? Which is a very interesting, attractive asset in view that we are in this environment of incredibly high volatility going forward. Give us some examples of the issuances of green bonds and how they perform better than conventional bonds then.
Well, the critical thing is that volatility figure mentioned. You know, right now, we're seeing a lot of volatility in bond markets for a variety of reasons. Green bonds do not collapse in price when ordinary bonds collapse in price as a rule. They hold their value. So you see a downturn, let's say when Donald Trump used to issue a tweet, the bond market would collapse for a day. Green bonds would hold their value. Now, if you're a fixed income investor, a pension fund and so on, that's gold dust. Because maintaining the value of your portfolio means that if you decide to retire tomorrow, they can pay out your retirement by cashing it in at a higher value than they would get otherwise than an ordinary bond portfolio. And that's been common across all currencies. So that's the value. Secondly, when bond markets froze in March of 2020, at the beginning of the pandemic globally, I had major investors phoning up and say, can you believe our bonds are still liquid? We're still getting bids and buy bids right in the middle of it when I can't sell anything else. It was an extraordinary moment. And for investors, they discovered that they had these gold nuggets in their portfolio called green bonds. And as a result, we now have a lot of people investing in this market purely on the value retention characteristics of the market. It's a defensive mechanism. On a positive side, you're beginning to see, as a result, differential yields. Well, certainly in the secondary market, in most currencies, you now see differential yield anywhere between 5 and 50 basis points. So we're not talking about 10% difference here if you're trying to buy a mortgage. But for a bank or a major institution, this is a lot of cash. Well, the UK government, they had a tiny differential in pricing when they did their sovereign of two basis points. That saved them £20 million compared to doing a vanilla bond. Nice. That helps the taxpayer. So that's beginning to appear. The secondary market price benefit means more primary demand and tighter bidding. And so you end up getting this win-win. The investors get a more valuable product and the issuers get a slight cut off their price. And that more than pays for any work involved in doing it, way more.
So then my question in my mind is that, you know, when will this be mainstream? Because if I look at total issuances, it's still 8% of total issuances last year. So the question in my mind is, when will, you know, green bonds become mainstream?
Look at a market which is showing what's going to happen. In Europe, last November, 40% of all corporate bond issuance was ESG or green theme. 40%. Now, it goes up and down for months, but I think the last month was only 14%. But we're now expecting by the end of the next year to see majority of corporate issuance in Europe hit the green and ESG-related theme. That's what you're going to see everywhere around the world. It's only a matter of time. And that's where the direction the market's going in Malaysia.
And you're going to focus on the issuances because there are really three key components here. One is the government sovereigns. You've got corporates or even the banks or financial institutions. It seems like governments are taking the lead here. How important is it for sovereign funds to create breadth and depth in the bond market?
You know, all bond markets require sovereign issuance and for benchmark pricing, especially, but also for liquidity. If you've got a large slab of issuance from a government, you provide the liquidity that helps fuel the whole market. So I'm going to say it's incredibly valuable. Is it absolutely essential? No. Markets can go in fact. Does it turbocharge markets? Yes, absolutely. So I am looking for the Malaysian government to consider issuance in the area. Look to the north, where Thailand's had great success with its green and social bonds. South, where Indonesia's had great success. Singapore's just issued or just about to issue, and so on. And then, of course, I've mentioned Japan before. And in Europe, I think something like half the countries of Europe already issued sovereign green bonds now. Again, a bit of a clue where the future is going to. This is important to build the market and grow issuance on all parties.
Yeah, because
of it. Of course, by the way, set demonstrations, set guide rails too.
On the Breakfast Grill, I'm in conversation with Sean Kinney, CEO of the Climate Bonds Initiative, an international NGO working to mobilize global capital for climate action. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Welcome back. On The Breakfast Grill, we have with us Sean Kinney. He's the CEO of the Climate Bonds Initiative. Now, you know, early on, Sean, we talked a lot about, you know, how sovereigns, corporates are beginning to issue a lot more green bonds. Can you just give us a sense about the investor base? Are they all just long-term pension funds and institutional investors?
Don't just say all. There's 130 trillion of them in the world, US. That's a lot. You know, the GDP of the US, the largest economy, is 17 trillion. So it gives you a sense of scale.
Yeah.
So, yes, pension funds, insurance funds, sovereign wealth funds are driving this market. There's no doubt about it. Why? Because they've all got in their DNA the idea of addressing long-term assets and match and liabilities matching issues. And climate change is a big risk for them. It's looking like it might wreck their portfolios going forward. So they're very keen to try and shift money subject to meeting risk yield requirements, because they've also got to have enough money to pay your pension out if you retire next week, whether they can. And a green bond is very simple, right? It's got a similar risk yield. As it becomes popular, it gets a slightly tighter yield, but that's not how it starts. With a bonus feature, which is it goes towards addressing environmental challenges. So what's not to like?
Yeah, what's not to like? And I wonder, that's why in my mind, the question is, you know, will retail investors, you know, get very interested in this kind of instrument and products? You know, because in the past, one wouldn't assume corporate bonds, you know, conventional bonds would be the domain of retail investors. But because as you see greater transparency, more disclosure, very clear mandates and objectives about what you do with green bonds, do you think there's going to be a growing appetite for retail investors in this area?
Look, I think it is. You've seen in Europe and the US the growth of ETFs as a start, exchange traded funds, as a way of getting retail access to these particular sorts of stuff. But remember that for retail investors, bond issuance is not that common.
Yeah.
It tends to be equity funds or funds that invest in bonds, like an ETF or whatever. There's an issue of the nature of opportunities that you might get in front of you. However, look, I'm going to say we're seeing this growth now in other markets, so I expect to see it. In fact, in the Japanese market, the Uridashi market, which is a retail investment market, has been dominated by thematic issuance for some time, including green bonds. So, I can't comment about who's going to be a first mover in Malaysia. But there's other kinds of things that you are going to see. So banks in many parts of the world have started offering retail products that work and walk and talk and smell like a bond. Term deposits that are green, where the money only goes towards green investments, for example, have been very popular in Australia and South Africa and a couple other countries. You've seen green repos. I have not yet seen a proper green credit card, although I did harangue my friends at Citibank today, where is it? But they promised me it's coming soon.
Promises, yeah. promises is all they can give.
Well, I know. But in principle, every single financial product can be green flavored.
Yeah.
And that's what I expect us to see. So as retail investors, we'll see other kinds of opportunities first.
But the interesting thing about these green bonds is the promise of where they will allocate and use those proceeds. So when you see the numbers, right, when you see the green bond issuances, where are they using the proceeds, right?
Look, there's a huge range of things reflecting what we've got to do around climate change and environmental challenges. But it's dominated by First Energy, which is about a third. And that's clean energy of various kinds. Although now you see grid infrastructure. So we need to quadruple the electrification of our economy by 2050. That means grid infrastructure is required as an enabling investment to ensure that clean energy can be integrated into the grid. Buildings outside of Malaysia, globally, it's about 30% of the whole market. It's green property bonds or whatever. In Malaysia, we haven't actually seen them. So it's a great disappointment to me. One of the reasons I was speaking at the Kakamas conference earlier today. Transport, so rail, electric rail qualifies, and electric vehicles. Now, we haven't seen enough. Very disappointed by the forward plans of Proton, for example. They should have a much more aggressive electric vehicle strategy because they're going to be blindsided because other companies in China and so on are producing cars that in the next 30 months are going to be cheaper than petrol cars. And then it's going to be very hard to argue that Proton shouldn't have a solid electric vehicle strategy. But maybe they'll come through it soon. Industrial, water, land use and agri, etc.
And that's why my mind is boggled. You know, we just had a government announcing their EV plan, right, to have 38% of EVs by 2040. And then you saw recently the UN Energy report saying we need $1 trillion in renewable power and about $130 billion in hydrogen by 2030. How are we going to just accelerate the issuances of green bonds? How are we going to get more investors hungry? Because we see that exponential growth, but clearly exponential isn't exponential enough.
Well, exponential growth will get us there if it continues the rates we've seen in the last couple of years. I've got a campaign at the moment to get $5 trillion of issuance in 2025. And as you said, we're going to reach, well, at the end of this year, a run rate of $1 trillion a year. We'll probably get more than $1 trillion next year. So long way to go, but we're making progress. If we can keep up the growth curve, we'll have to get there. How do we do this? Well, we've got to do more in identifying, being clear about what it is that we need to invest in. Simple rules drive financial markets. Boundaries increase the value of markets. So in energy, we're pretty clear now. In property, we don't have the appropriate labelling scheme in Malaysia. We solve that. You will get billions and billions and billions of dollars of bonds issued quickly in Malaysia because there's a pent-up demand for it, including amongst Malaysian investors, not just international investors. In the transport sector, we're going to see rapid growth in electric vehicle fleets, which qualify. But also, there is scope to grow rail. I mean, maybe we'll revive the high-speed rail between Singapore and Kuala Lumpur. Bingo, big green bonds. Industrial transition. We need to be shifting our steel industry globally, for example, to using recycling, electric arc furnaces, and green hydrogen. You know what? It's going to happen way faster than anyone thought because green hydrogen prices are dropping like a stone. Water infrastructure. Did you know that water consumes 7% of the world's electricity through pumps? Whoa, that is a huge amount. If we can get in the energy use down, that could be a major contributor. Not to mention that in a world of really volatile weather, stable water infrastructure is utterly critical. Including things like recycling water. That's investment. That's CapEx.
And when I listen to you, right, it really sounds like we need to basically have very clear boundaries, which means the proper legislation, regulations to kind of frame it so that we can move forward and accelerate the issuances and investments here. The challenge you have around the world is that the regulatory framework is very fragmented, isn't it? Countries are having their own regulatory standards. If we are able to harmonize and create some regional global taxonomy, that will even accelerate and move the issuances forward. I just note that, you know, in the past you did do a lot of advisory for China, and China did recently tighten their regulations, right, to be aligned with international standards going forward.
We worked for the European side with Tsinghua University for the Chinese side on what's called a common ground taxonomy, which is, as it sounds, the common approach between the two countries. And under the European setup international platform on sustainable finance, we're looking at doing that for all countries around the world. So Malaysia, if I remember correctly, is a member of the international platform on sustainable finance. In fact, more than half the world's economies are members already. Let's start talking. You know, we have actually a broad common approach between most taxonomies. If you look at the Singapore taxonomy that we've been supporting the Monetary Authority of Singapore on, it's remarkably similar to taxonomies taxonomies in terms of structure and approach that have been done in Europe or in Colombia or in Chile or in India or in Vietnam, for that matter. And you'll see a matching of the Hong Kong one that's coming through later this year. So we're not that far apart. But of course, every country likes to wear its own uniform, right? I mean, when I'm in Indonesia, I wear an Indonesian shirt.
Yeah.
Or when I'm in Kuala Lumpur, I should be wearing a proper Kuala Lumpur outfit.
Batik, for sure.
When I turn up, well, exactly. But at the same time, the cut of the shirt is still much the same.
Yeah.
And that's what you're seeing with regulations and taxonomies.
With this light regulatory touch taking place, the biggest issue, of course, is that, you know, most of these sustainability bonds are non-binding voluntary commitments. And so that's why in my mind is whether things like sustainability-linked bonds are the way forward, where there are no restrictions to how the proceeds can be used, but there is definitely penalties or higher cost when you don't meet specific KPIs. What's your take, right, about balancing between a bond which has clear KPI outcomes, but there's no clear intention to what it's being used for, versus another bond which basically articulates what it wants to do but without those KPIs?
Well, look, if you're a steel company and you build an electric arc furnace which uses recycled steel, I'm just going to say that is a green investment, even though your overall steel company may not be doing so well on emissions. Hey, that's cool. So I want you to be able to issue a green use of proceeds bond for that. Mind you, but then if you're a steel company and you want to transition to becoming a low carbon steel company, which will probably mean electric arc and hydrogen based steel and so on, that's also cool by me, as long as it's appropriately ambitious. So in the sustainability bond market, we've had a wide variety of approaches. Some good, some pretty crap, to be honest. We're in the process now of rolling out assessment tools, benchmarks and so on. You know, like if you're a company like, I don't know, maybe it's Sime Darby, and you say you're going to reduce your emissions for a variety of reasons, including sequestration, perhaps in palm oil plants, by 5%. Is that good? Do you have any idea? I've got no idea. We need to have a framework, which is a science-based framework, bring the science into the room, crack out some rules to judge Sime Darby accordingly and find out whether it is appropriately ambitious. Well, I'm just going to tell you, in the oil company area, we've got a real problem here. Shell has got a 2050 net zero plan, plans to do it by continuing to open up new oil and gas fields for the next 20 years, but planting trees in an area the size of Spain, apparently. I don't know where they're going to find the land. That's the plan. Now, so it looks good, net zero by 2050, but actually, this is rubbish. So we need to have those assessment tools to make it work. Once we can have a proper kind of framework process, I'm speaking to global investors all the time about this, you will see this market grow. It's another pillar of capital purpose, if you like.
And this is the biggest issue, right? Without all these proper risk assessment tools in place, are you worried that bonds are becoming less about the fundamentals of the business and more about branding and marketing? That it's just a wrap around something that, if it's basically not executed with the best of intentions, will tarnish the broader good intentions of the investment community there?
Well, I mean, first, you still have to get creditworthiness. You don't escape that by doing a thematic bond. You know, you've still got to be able to do the basics, and that still works. So, and investors will still take, you know, they've got two criteria looking at just the one. That's what it boils down to. If the thematic market fails, then yes, it would be a problem for issuers, and you'd see loss of confidence in different kinds of issuers' plans. The reason I don't think it'll fail is twofold. One is, most bond issuers are larger actors. They're big companies or big banks or sovereigns. And they can't afford to mess up their, or at least it becomes really problematic if they mess up their reputation. Take the case of Mozambique that a few years ago. This is a high-risk company, a country. They issued what's called a tuna fish bond for 8%, $700 million to finance the growing of a tuna industry. They bought patrol boats instead. And then it came out that they hadn't fully disclosed the loans on the book. So they weren't quite as good shape as that. Their interest rates went up to 12%. Now, between 8% and 12%, that is a huge amount of money extra they've got to pay out each year. And of course, then they went into semi-bankruptcy, have to call the IMF and all those sorts of things. Now, no government wants to do that if they can avoid it. I mean, it might happen, but the consequences last for years as a result. And that applies to corporates as well.
For sure. And Sean, as we head to COP27, following COP26 in Glasgow, what do you want to see happen in COP27 to accelerate the adoption of green financing and green bonds?
Well, on a macro level, we need to understand that we can finance what we have to do for the private sector if only we get our enabling policy and regulation and incentives right. It's a very simple idea. This COP will be more of a COP of finance ministries than climate change ministries than ever before, which is exactly what it needs to become. Climate change is a material material financial risk. Speak to Bank Negara, speak to the central banks of the world about this. They will now tell you that. So it needs to be understood as a financial challenge and therefore solution going forward. So that's step one. Step two is we need to see growing appreciation of the role of science-based definitions in this area. That's the clarity part of it. And then finally, and I want to say it a slightly more narrow way, I expect this COP and the next COP in Abu Dhabi to be the COP of green sukuk. Islamic finance needs to come to the fore, and Malaysia needs to play a really aggressive role in growing that. The Securities Commission, to be frank, has been fantastic in pushing this so far, but it doesn't mean it couldn't do more. And let's make it highly visible internationally, and let's support other countries with an Islamic finance sector to be able to take advantage of this market and to drive an understanding as a result in society of what it is that we actually need to do, which is sadly lacking. Well, because none of us have had the chance to grapple this through things like green finance, we make it clear to everyone.
Sean, thank you for your time. Malaysia definitely needs to do more. That's all the time we have for today on The Breakfast Grill. Sean Kinney, CEO of Climate Bonds Initiative, an international NGO working to mobilize global capital for climate action. I'm Philip C., BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.